want what I'm about to say to be on the record.
It is so.
Before I call the meeting to order, I'm going to ask for a little bit of grace today because I just had to have unexpected dental work done, and I still have Novocaine in my mouth. I can't feel anything in my jaw. So, you know, apologies if it affects the meeting, but I think it'll be okay. So I'd like to call the July 5th, 2023 Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee meeting to order. I will begin by entertaining a motion to approve the May 31st meeting minutes.
I will make that motion, and I have a question.
All right. So
I'll second that motion.
Moved by Nolan, second by Erner, and we're in discussion on the minutes.
The minutes use the term houselessness instead of homelessness in many places, and that was new to me, so I wondered if there was a reason or if it was just autotype. It was in mainly one section, and I didn't print it out, but I thought it could easily be found if we wanted to change it. Is houselessness a preferred term by any individual or groups? You know, I think there's a sense in which there's a synonymous meaning, but I thought homelessness leaves open the possibility that somebody might not have a house but still doesn't have a home, you know, like an apartment dweller.
I've heard it, so I don't think that it's a coincidence or a mis, you know,
that it
right
was
there. I think, yeah, that was probably intentional.
So I'm happy to approve the minutes as typed, except that I don't remember. No, actually, I guess I think we should change it because I don't remember any of us using that term.
Yeah.
And so I think that the minutes should reflect the word usage of the group.
Do you remember which resolution it was referring to?
I think towards it may have been one of the Phil's resolutions towards the end, but I'm not sure.
I found one in 342. It's not. It says houseless individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have thought unhoused would be the term for the adjective.
And
or
since
homeless.
We have unhoused, houselessness could be the parallel structure. But again, I just think we should have a conversation and change our usage if we're going to do it, and then the minutes should reflect that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I wonder if it was from language. I mean, do you recall, Jay, what the...
I had assistance preparing these, so I would have to go through myself. So I'm happy to change them all to more accurately reflect committee language.
Yeah, let's do that. So, Legislator Nolan, would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we replace houselessness with homelessness and houseless individual with unhoused in every occurrence throughout the minutes, and request that we get some further information about reasons that we might consider changing our language around this.
I'll second that.
Yep, great. So that motion's on the table. Any discussion on that motion? All right. I'll call the question on the amendment. All those in favor of amending the minutes?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Any further discussion on the minutes themselves overall?
They were excellent.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. So with that, I'll call the question on approving the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. The minutes are approved as amended unanimously. So we will get right into resolutions. The first resolution is Resolution 381, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement within the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to accept grant funds for the Golden Hill Renewable Energy Project, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget through the Department of Planning. Can I have a motion to discuss? By Nolan, seconded by Lopez. I will defer to the county executive team to give us a little bit of background on this, and I'd ask if you... Actually, we'll ask questions later, but could you just give us a little bit of background for whoever would.
So thank you. So one of the things that we're doing here is taking some direction from the legislature in terms of putting resolutions in that are placeholders so that we can begin a discussion on what we need in order to effectuate grants and other opportunities. There's two resolutions this month. One is 381 and one is 382. 381 resolution is essentially letting the legislature know that there is a contract coming. to the grant that was authorized by the legislature to the county. And that contract would essentially deal with the fact that Ulster County has been awarded funds to essentially provide for solar facilities at the project on Golden Hill. We're now working through the contract language and issues with respect to New York State DEC. It's a bit of a slog, and the reason for that is that this is one of the first instances where these types of grants are being issued for affordable housing, and so they're working through that issue in terms of getting you a contract. Hopefully by next month we'll have a contract. The contract will be specific in terms of where it can be used and how it can be used. And it's about $1.6 million. And the second resolution will explain to you how that money would be used and what the county's responsibilities are and what the developer's responsibilities are with respect to that funding.
Is the intention that we postpone it this month?
I believe that is the case, but what we want to try to do is get out ahead of any conversations or any questions.
Great.
So that we can get them answered so that it doesn't get proposed the next month.
Yeah.
And the reason here is that we're in final designs, not we, but the Penrose is in final designs with respect to the project on Golden Hill, and we don't want to hold them up, and how this project relates to their designs is critical. And so we have to have not only this resolution and the contract associated with it, but the next resolution and the agreements associated with that have to be worked out in order for them to move forward and get all of their designs finalized so that they can move to construction if they're awarded funding.
Great. And I very much appreciate the strategy of submitting them early so that we can begin to discuss them. Any questions from the committee? Yep, Legislator Petit.
I do. This project is another one that's getting kind of mired, muddy. One of the questions I had is has it actually been transferred over to the LDC yet? Because
ownership,
there's a lot of
mean.
County input, you know, helping out with the city of Kingston. The other is, had read in the paper that now Family of Woodstock was going to be more involved, and it was a 51% ownership. Mm-hmm. I don't mind passing through county funding. We've done it with RUFCO to say family. I worry about passing public funding through to a private developer. So
if I can answer the one question with respect to the transfer, we have not transferred it over. Quite frankly, the LDC, the local development corporation, wants to own this property for as short time as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the authorization from the legislature to transfer it. One of the reasons we hadn't transferred it in the past was we hadn't completed all the environmental work at the city level, and we didn't have an approved subdivision. So you had essentially the legislature authorized transfer of it by map, by not subdivision. We now have filed, the county has filed the approved subdivision, not the county, but we filed the approved subdivision with respect to this. So we can transfer it, we just have not at this particular point in time.
Okay.
The second piece, which I believe is a question in terms of the Family of Woodstock being an owner on this, the reason for that is that there is a funding source that's available to the project that will be able to use that funding source if there is an ownership entity that's established that's a nonprofit. So the ownership entity will be Family of Woodstock at a 51% level as a nonprofit.
So this grant funding for, so I'm sorry, I should be directing it to you.
Yeah, go ahead.
But
yeah,
for the energy upgrades or the solar will be going to family then?
So it will be going to the project.
Corporation?
It will be going to the project, and the project will be a construction project. So it'll be a reimbursement for construction purposes. So the grant funding will not be given to them. They will be basically passed through to a construction contract.
Yep, Legislator Nolan.
Is there any reason not to go ahead and pass this? Or anything going to change between now and next month?
The short answer is you don't have a contract in front of you.
Yeah.
So that's the main reason not to do it. We were unable. We thought we could get a contract in here so that you have an opportunity to see a draft. But given where we are in terms of the newness of the program for nonprofits and some of the workload associated with the individual at DEC is,
we don't have a contract yet. We do have a draft work program, which we're more than happy to share. We're working on that draft work program now, but we don't have actual contract language. That said, it's not going to be anything surprising or at a state revenue contract, but given the reluctance of the legislature to act on things where they don't have something in front of them to act on, we were unwilling to think that it should go forward.
Then I make a motion that we
I would like further discussion before. Well, you can make that motion, that's fine.
That's
but
right.
We can have further discussion.
I didn't see
there.
Any other hands. My
I usually like to let all the committee members go before I share all my tough questions. So I'm going to go now. All right, Legislator Erner.
Thank you, and through the chair, I appreciate the planning department sending this to us in advance as well. To follow up on Legislator Petit's question, I would really appreciate a little more detailed explanation, not tonight, maybe next time, or at some point, again, about the family versus Penrose ownership. Part of the reason being, I've heard Penrose in a public meeting, and maybe it wasn't stated for the record, but saying, well, no, even though they're going to be majority owners, like, we're still going to make the decisions, basically. And that's very confusing to me. So I'd like that clarified at some point.
Sure. And I'll just, I have a couple of questions, but I'll just begin by saying, I think we've, everyone involved in the project's been very, it's not a surprise. You know, the family of Woodstock component. I think we've known about that for some time. It's in the resolution. It's in the backup. I just want to clarify for the record that that's not a surprise that the family, that family has the 51% ownership. I do have a question on this about the matching costs, and I wonder if this might be a typo or just could use some clarification. The last whereas clause for the results says that whereas Ulster County, the Golden Hill project developer, has agreed to provide matching funds, but the actual breakdown shows the total project cost broken down into two buckets, the New York State DEC grant and the Penrose match. Is there a county match, is it a Penrose match?
There is. The application that we filed shows that the match coming from the developer, and that has been accepted by DEC as an appropriate match. So those are not only the design costs, but also the construction costs associated with it. So there is a match that's required. The match that is shown in the application, and our understanding, when we see the contract, we'll have greater clarity on that. That match has been accepted as being paid for by the developer or matched by a developer.
So the whereas clause that says Ulster County, the Golden Hill project developer. Like it appears that you're labeling Ulster County the Golden Hill project developer and saying that we will provide the match. That's the last whereas clause. Mm-hmm. It's midway through the page.
Mm-hmm. Understood. So
we're doing it with Penrose's money?
Yeah, the breakdown in the backup.
So how about if we add the word whereas Ulster County through the Golden Hill project developer will agree to provide the match?
I mean, we can't just strike Ulster County and replace it with Penrose.
That's fine. I would call it the Golden Hill Project Developer just in case we run into issues.
Yeah. So let's just strike. So let's just
family
strike.
After
yeah.
they buy it.
Yeah. Let's. Why don't we just? Should we just strike the word Ulster County? The word
that
Ulster
works.
County. All right.
That works.
Would someone on
I
the committee?
I make a motion that we strike Ulster County in the last whereas prior to the resolves.
There's a motion. Is there a second? Second by Erner. Any discussion on that? And we have another month, so if for some reason you review it and we need to add that back in. But
thank
I think
you.
Thank you. All right, so I'll call the question on that amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Any further discussion on the project itself? Otherwise, I would entertain a motion to postpone for 1 month.
So moved.
Right.
Second.
Moved by Nolan, second by Stewart. Any discussion on the postponement further? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor on postponing this resolution 1 month?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you. Resolution 382, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute various agreements to fulfill requirements for grant funding through the New York State Climate Smart Communities Program for renewable energy equipment at the Golden Hill housing site through the Department of Planning. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Second.
All right. And Director Doyle, if you want to give us any further background on here, otherwise we'll anticipate a similar postponement.
So yes, we would think that this would be postponed as well. We gave you an 11-page memo from Penrose that lays out the structure for these agreements and the reasoning for that. We've reviewed this memo at the county level before it was released to you, so we're comfortable that this works for us. That doesn't mean but in order to explain, let me put it this way, in order to explain that, what I would say to you is that the grant provides for the fact that the county has to own it, right? So one of the things that we have to do is establish ownership. So one of the agreements is the fact that even though we own it, right, how do we make sure that it's available to the project? So there's a power purchase agreement in here that basically allows the county to sell power to the entity. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I want you to think back when the county did composting. We've got a composting grant, and that composting grant was given to the RRA. You took an environmental easement because you had to own it. You took an environmental easement over the project so that you would own it at the RRA. Similarly here, what we're going to do is take an environmental easement on the site to establish the county's ownership on the site. So that's one of the other agreements that is in here. So first of all, we can sell them the power. Second of all, we can continue to, even though it's on their property, that we can continue to establish an ownership interest because we have an easement for it. Then the next thing is we need to make sure that there's a maintenance agreement. In other words, who's responsible for maintaining the project? And rather than let the county be responsible, even though we're the owner for maintaining the project, that responsibility is given to the owner of the project. So the ownership responsibility rests with the owner of the project. I think there's a couple of other, and then the last thing is the ability essentially to allow them to build the project. So the next thing is rather than go through a process of procurement, where essentially the county would have to procure and we would have to build, what ends up happening here is the process it devolves to Penrose as a chosen entity that by the county to essentially go out and build the project. So the procurement issues have been satisfied. And we're having that conversation back with our purchasing department and also with the grant source. Does that adequately explain what's going on?
Yeah, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I had a few questions I still have. So I read a little bit more of the details, and now I understand. Thank you for the explanation about filling in the blanks next month. There are some details in there, though, now, one of which is the useful life and the option for the developer essentially to be able to buy it. But then it seems to define the useful life as 5 years. How was that arrived at? Is my first question.
I will get you that answer rather than speak to it tonight.
Okay.
So you need a useful life answer?
Yes, please. And
okay.
Go ahead, Legislator Erner. Yep.
Thank you.
I think that I do think that may refer to the tax credits, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Not the useful life of the facility.
Okay.
But I'll check that.
And then, so I saw what you were talking about there with the maintenance agreement. And I assume that is in consideration of that we will be selling them the power for $1 a year. This might be a question better in Ways and Means, but is that like how do the numbers work out? Like what would the cost normally be of selling the power if we didn't own it or if we owned it and just didn't charge the turn the maintenance over to them? Do you know what I'm asking?
I do. I think I do. The understanding that the reason for this grant is to provide reduced electrical costs associated with the individuals that are living
residents
in the facilities. So the access to the grant monies itself is essentially that. So you're not selling the you're not selling the power to people that are on a market basis. You're basically getting the benefit of the grant to build a building in order so that they can reduce the cost to the people that live in the facility Does that help?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a good idea to me, but I'm just...
Yeah, and I think there was somewhere in the backup, I think a mention of a savings, an electrical savings from at market rate would be a savings of $90,000 a month or something like that.
I don't know
whole,
what, yeah, but
there was something in there about the total development monthly electrical cost savings that this provides, which was pretty staggering. Yeah. I hope I'm not misquoting that. It was I remember seeing $90,000 somewhere. Was it a month? Well, in any event, it's a lot. Does that end? So, did you have any further questions?
One last question.
Yes, go ahead.
So, it seems I like this. It seems very creative. Are we in any trouble possibly with the grantor that we're cheating?
Well, we would never cheat. Let's put it
that
way.
We would never cheat.
There's always a risk in grant sources. There's always a risk that you will run afoul of something that is not explicit, but implicit in the grant opportunity. Where we have a situation where we're in a fairly untried area with respect to this kind of thing, that kind of raises, you know, we're very much concerned about how this is going to work. And my sense would be is that the risk is not back to the county as much as it's back to Penrose. And that's what we would try to do with respect to those agreements, is to put it back on the developer itself rather than back to Penrose.
Thank you.
That's good skills. the way you cleaned that up was beautiful, actually. Yeah, from cheating to... Yeah.
No, he was never cheating, just to be clear. I do want to, before we take a motion to postpone this, I do want to say one concern that I have with this strategy is this is going to be postponed in the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee. That means that it likely will not get airtime at Ways and Means, and getting it in front of them is important, obviously. So the tactic of submitting it early so that there's a little bit of preliminary discussion will need further, like we need to make sure that they talk about this. So I'm happy to help with Chair Gavaris to give it some airtime. Because otherwise the strategy doesn't work. Obviously, conversations that happen in health don't always translate into outcomes on the floor. So I just wanted to bring that up.
One of the questions that didn't get asked, and I just want to let everyone aware of it from a transparency standpoint, is changes in laws have essentially allowed the county to collect tax credits for things that we're normally not eligible for because we don't receive any tax break. We don't pay any taxes. This project will generate tax credits. The proposal is to essentially move those tax credits back to Penrose, and that's within the agreement. And the reason for that is twofold. One is that you wouldn't have the tax credits absent Penrose participation as an affordable housing project. So that's the first reason. And the second reason is the project continues to have a financial gap, which we're working to try to close. So absent we're closing that financial gap, the project doesn't move forward and we don't have a project at all.
Okay. I make a motion that we postpone for 1 month.
I'll second. You can
second. Okay. Stuart for this one. Yeah, so moved by Nolan, second by Stuart. Any discussion on the postponement? I'll call the question on the postponement. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we're postponed 1 month on 382. Resolution 390, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget, Department of Health and Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Erner, second by Petit. I will defer to Commissioner McDonald to give us a little bit of background.
Sure. This was a small $20,000 contract that the Department of Health and Mental Health had with the Federated Sportsmen Club. And but with the separation of the departments, it makes more sense for the home to be with the Department of Mental Health, because the Sportsman's Club is a part of our suicide prevention activities. And we like to be able to have the fishing, hunting population hearing about suicide prevention and understanding safe gun use and all of that sort of stuff. So we determined that the money would move from health to mental health and just continue the contract.
Can you say more about the suicide prevention work? Because this, I can see that population being important because they have firearms in the home.
Mm-hmm.
I can see, but maybe that's not all that I see. So can you say more about that?
Well, they were very integral in the development of our gun shop project, in which we targeted, and this is before my time, but it was very successful in that we targeted gun shop owners to get them engaged in suicide prevention activities. And so we would invite the gun shop owners to our activities. They would have us table at their events, the gun shows, the knife shows, and that sort of thing. We would have locks for firearms. We would talk about the fact that, our speak prevention, our speak committee is not against guns. What we are is against suicide. So if you are able to carefully, if you have someone that you're concerned about in your home with the firearm, let's just make sure we lock it up safely and get them supported as well. So we have materials that connect with that. And we still do that tabling.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Yep, I'll go with Nolan and then Erner.
Yeah, I support this, and I think it's really good to have the open space, I guess, as part of what the club does. I would just say that I have to say that I have received complaints about the Federated Sportsmen's Club. They are a nonprofit, and the complaint is that they engage in partisan political activities. And so I would just urge that whoever is working with this contract and monitoring it for the Department of Mental Health get on their email list, and it may just be a question of some education around what nonprofits do and don't do that is within their mission and doesn't cause a problem. But I think that they should be cautious in a realm where it doesn't appear to me that they've had materials forwarded to me that are troubling.
Wow.
I'd also like to see a list of their projects each year that are funded with this allocation.
We can absolutely do that. It's in their deliverables to track it better. Thank you.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I second Legislator Nolan's worries that, as you heard from your constituents, I wasn't familiar with this group, and read some of what I suspect you're hearing about. My question is, I respect the fact that those closest to the problem are closest to the solution, so that folks who are, know about firearms would presumably be the ones to know how to handle them safely compared to anybody else. And if they are advocating for loosening gun laws or other legislation like that on the state level, which it appears that they might be, or some of the associated clubs are, that does worry me. And also, like, liberalizing laws around gun shops themselves was some of what I was reading about. So while I'm happy to hear that the shops are involved in these fairs, and I'd love to hear more about those, and also what does speak mean?
It's suicide prevention, education, awareness, and knowledge.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think this this program sounds like a really worthwhile thing to be doing, especially because it addresses a group of people that probably are not super receptive to government involvement in certain areas of their life, and I would think that this would be one of those areas that, you know, a lot of these people might take kind of a hostile view. And I think that what we're doing is like building bridges, and I think that that is a really good thing. So I think this sounds like a great project. And assuming that we can address the issues that Legislator Nolan brings up, I think this sounds like a worthwhile thing for us to be doing.
So I'd like to echo that sentiment, but since we are waiting for more, I would like to consider a postponement on this. We were, with the help of our staff, I was able to find the 2000 22 contract. I don't think it was included as backup. It would be great if it was going forward. But it speaks to a lot of different services, including three core programs, a lend-a-pole program, which is to do with fishing poles, I guess, the speak program, and then a hunting safety class. I'm still confused about how all of this fits together. I'm also, like, it's, you know, I personally think the NRA is an insidious organization, and they're listed here as a deliverable that an NRA certified instructor shall teach each pre-licensing class. I mean, that might just be who's teaching these classes, and I get that, you know, in many ways the NRA is part of our community, but I would love to know if there were other options. I have a hard time, you know, de facto funding that organization by requiring that one of their dues-paying instructors or whatever the instruction process is. I'm sure that in a way that is creating a marketplace for the NRA's services, which is something I do not want this county participating in personally. I applaud all of the work to increase gun safety. I think hunting is an important part of the community in this county in particular. I wish that that was all that I had to say about the NRA.
So would it work from both sides to have the contract include the certification but not require it to be NRA and leave who the choice is of the instructor for that up to the sportsman?
I'm certainly open to it. As I mentioned, we're trying to find a home for this contract that makes the most sense because it is so connected to our suicide prevention work. We thought Department of Mental Health, but the other pieces of it, I am no expert in lending a pole or
whatever. Yeah.
So I'm open to addressing any of those concerns in the contract as advised.
Well, I would just say on that the Trout Unlimited, it has been a member of Sports Federated Sportsmen in the past. I don't know if it still is, the local chapters that I've been involved with. And so there is a mental health component to the lend-a-pole activities, and, you know, I think to think about taking courses so that you have gun safety, you know, so I think it does fit, and I hope that it can expand all of us to hear about this program.
Yeah.
And I think removing restrictions that tie it to advocacy groups is part of what our concern is. Both in terms of their messaging that goes out to their newsletter whenever they send that out, and in this type of specifying that they will be using a specific group. I know that for some chainsaw groups that we've tried to get going to deal with tree falls and trails and so forth, that there are only a certain number of groups that will offer chainsaw trainings. And so that may be the case here. It may be a single source provider. But still, we don't have to specify that we require it. They can just propose that that's what they're going to do.
I just want to say one last thing, and then I'll entertain a motion to postpone for a month. I just finished an interesting book called The Comfort Crisis, and it spoke a lot about mental health and about the way that we are in our phones and we are really kind of just numbed by the technology. And the remedy that the book, that the author suggests is kind of engaging with the natural environment more. And the story arc that kind of ties it all together is he goes on this very epic caribou hunt in Alaska. And I want to acknowledge that the role of sportsmanship, the role of hunting even, and being in nature broadly, could be very important and part of the kind of mental health array. So I do want to acknowledge that I value this. But with that, I would love to hear a motion to postpone.
So I'm not exactly sure of the nature of what we're looking for during the time of the
Yeah, I would like to see the contract that we've had in the past with them and any detail about the work that this grant is funding.
Okay.
And will that cause any hardship, do we believe, to any of the programs getting going? Or?
So I believe that they have been doing the work and haven't had any disbursement of dollars for all of 23, so it will cause a continued hardship for them in not being able to get paid.
So it would be my feeling that we could go ahead with this and just require the submission of those materials. I think we know what they're going to be with sufficient specificity.
I mean, I would like to move that we strike the NRA from all of the contract language. I'm not going to vote for something that has the NRA referenced in it tonight, personally.
I'm not good with that.
I think it's important to find out if it's the NRA, if that's the only organization that offers,
yeah,
you know, this type of training. So
it might be.
If the organization, those people out there, are limited, you know, then you may be in a position where there is no other organization that'll provide this.
I appreciate that, and I acknowledge that might be the case. I just this specifies it. This requires it, and I'd like to just examine that, Legislator Erner.
I'm sorry, through the chair, Commissioner McDonald. I had been under the impression that this was just shifting it from health to mental health. Can you explain why that means that they haven't been paid all year?
See, I don't believe they had a contract. There is a contract that has been drafted with the Department of Health, and the decision was made for it to be housed in the Department of Mental Health, so the contract has not been executed until the funds are moved, and then we'll move to execute the contract.
Okay. Maybe that's a question. Can Deputy Executive Contreras say more about that? I'm not.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was discussion about Dr. Smith felt that since it was more around suicide prevention, that she thought it would be more appropriate to be in the mental health department because and not just the suicide prevention. I think you articulated it well, Abe, the connection to being in nature and how those types of activities can help with mental health. Her argument was just that it should be in the mental health department. And so we've kind of been going back and forth about it, and then we all agreed, and I think just time went by in that discussion.
I will also acknowledge that this is a $20,000 contract, one that wouldn't come before the legislature otherwise.
This is a budget transfer.
Yeah, it's a budget transfer, right. So it's just kind of like the digging that is coming up with the other stuff. So, you know, it's not a contract that we would have had to vote on otherwise. So if this program is being delayed, if we're going to miss an opportunity to implement this, that's frustrating because for the reasons that Director Doyle mentioned earlier, it's always good to be proactive with these resolutions rather than have them be up against a deadline, if that is what the case is here. I would defer to the will of the committee if we wanted to advance it tonight or if we wanted to postpone it a month, even if it does delay them getting paid. Yep.
Commissioner?
It might help. I'm aware that the New York State DEC does have licensed certified firearms instructors, so I don't think the NRA is the only entity that could provide that service.
Yep.
Just offering that because I'm aware of the fact that that's the service they provide.
So could we change the language to that, license qualified?
Well, technically, the contract isn't before us. This is just a budget amendment, and we found, and like the contract isn't even in the backup. It's something that Jay found on wherever the internet, not the internet. What's it called?
New World.
The interwebs.
Yeah.
So I have a suggestion.
Go ahead.
That the building bridges aspect of this relationship, I think, is really important, and so I would prefer to go ahead and pass this tonight. And to convey through Commissioner McDonald that we prefer that they look at other providers this year, and that next year, if they come, they can expect that, or next year, it will be in your hands because it's a small contract, but we would ask you next year to require them to explain why they would be going with the providers that they're proposing here now, and try to get cooperation rather than any withholding of funds that have already been a little bit delayed.
Okay, Legislator Lopez?
Right, no, I agree with that. Look, ultimately this is about preventing.
Yeah.
You know, and I always hear if we can save one life, then it's worth it. Yeah. You know, if we are able to put politics aside for the evening, look, I disagree with some of the characterizations that were levied against
you know, the organizations that were mentioned tonight, but I don't think that this is the forum, you know, to debate those. You know, we'll cross that bridge, you know, when and if it happens later down the line. But, you know, ultimately, this program's in place, you know, and everything's set to move forward. They're just looking for the funding. So we can come to a consensus, you know, a bipartisan one in order to move this forward. I think that that would be, you know, the best move, you know, all around for those that will be the recipients of this program and for our body as well. So.
All right. Well, if everyone is comfortable with that, then I will call the question on resolution. We're up to 390. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. And I do want to acknowledge that my language is probably not appropriate for a mature seat in this committee, so I appreciate you mentioning that. Resolution number 391, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept an increase funding from the New York State Office of Addiction Services and supports for a 4% cost of living adjustment through the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
All right, moved by Stewart, second by Petit. And if this is just a simple COLA increase and acceptance of money, I don't know we need further discussion. I see Tara nodding. Any questions, concerns from the committee? With that, I'll call the question on 391. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 391. It's unanimous. Resolution 392, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $10,959, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Family Services, Inc. Through the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Nolan. Second by...
I'll second it.
Stewart. And this is, let's see. All right, so we'll go to Commissioner McDonald to give us a little bit of background.
So for this and the next two resolutions, it's all to distribute the COLA that we received. There were specific codes that were eligible to receive, specific program codes that were eligible to receive the COLAs, and we are now distributing the money.
Great. All right. Any questions from the committee? All right. I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So 392 is unanimous. 393, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $2,548, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county with Gateway Community Industries, Department of Mental Health.
I'll move it.
Yep. Moved by Nolan. Second by Stewart. Any discussion from the committee? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 393 is unanimous. Resolution 394, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $7,930, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county through the office, with the Mental Health Associates of Ulster County, Inc., Department of Mental Health. I have a motion to discuss. Moved by Nolan. Second by Stewart.
I'll do it again.
all right. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. And then 394 is the last one of that sort, correct? We'll take 394, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $7,930, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county Mental Health Associates in Ulster County, Inc., Department of Mental Health.
Did we just vote on this?
This is 395.
Oh, then I read the wrong one. We just did, which one did we just do?
We did 94.
We did 94. Okay, I read the same one twice. So this is 395, do-over on me reading it.
This
one is RSS. The last one was for Mental Health Associates. This one is for RSS, approving the execution of a contract for $11,004, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, and soon to by the county with Rehabilitation Support Services, Inc., Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan. Second by...
I'll second
Stewart,
it.
Great. All right, any discussion? Yep, Legislator Erner.
So I've heard concerns about some of the compensation of some of the top people at this organization that we're supporting, and I just want to put out there for future discussion, possibly, that we might consider
when we award contracts to specify that we expect you not to be ballooning your CEO pay on the back of the county contract.
We could update our procurement manual resolution in the future to require that not only do they put the amounts of the people that are receiving the pay, you know, the employees that are executing the contract, but they also put their top salaries from their top executives. That would be interesting.
And we would have to come up with language, I think, to operationalize that, that would have to do with the relationship of the highest paid employee to the lowest paid employee, which in many European countries is a much smaller ratio. They're much closer together and is associated with better health outcomes.
Interesting. Well, that's definitely food for a future resolution. On this, I know that often Legislator Petit, yeah, but you want to?
I'll be a no.
Great. Okay, yeah. So with that, if there's no further discussion, I'll call the question on this. All those in favor?
Aye.
And the opposed? We have Legislator Petit. All right. Before we go on, I'm imagining that we're going to get one of these for Family of Woodstock as well. I think they are... they would also be one of the receiving agencies for the COLA?
Not for this particular COLA.
No, okay.
They have OASAF-funded prevention work that was not a part of the approved program code.
Okay. All right, so then we'll move on to Resolution 396, approving the execution of a contract for $185,000 entered into by the county with Hudson Valley National Center for Veteran Reintegration through the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion
I'll
to
move this?
Moved by Nolan, second by Stewart. Commissioner McDonald, do you want to give us a little bit of background?
Sure. So this is the peer vet-to-vet program where they do socialization, they do behavioral health support. They really connect with vets that are struggling in any way that's necessary. This program first started in, I want to say, 20 counties, and since last year it has been offered in all 52 counties of the state. So we are going to be getting this money probably in the going on into the future. Unfortunately, we don't find out until the year if we're going to accept it. So like this money, we didn't find out until March, until February, and didn't get the money until March. And so it makes things a little bit difficult. But it's been fairly successful.
Okay. Great. Any questions yet? Legislative receipt?
I just had questions about where the services are being performed. Mm-hmm. I didn't fact check. But I had a veteran say that it was in 701 Grand Street, and they've been they've had to relocate. And originally it was in Enterprise Drive, and I've heard great things about the program itself, especially peer-to-peer, because nobody understands what a veteran's going through except for another veteran. So they were displaced from 701 Grand, so where are they and how are they going to continue with the service there?
So I'm not sure if Joanne, if you
want to... Yeah, my understanding is that they're in negotiations for the state somewhere in Houston. So fingers crossed, they're hopefully going to be moving into a new space soon.
Okay. So they've discontinued their services for now?
No, I think they're still continuing to provide.
Yeah, I don't know for sure about them, but most peer-to-peer work is done wherever the person lives or wants to meet. So they do need an office. But their provision of services probably is not always at an office. That's not the most comfortable place for peers to meet with other peers. It's certainly true in the world of Samadhi. And I've heard this Mark talk about the veterans as basically working under the same kind of model. So the peer could, for example, say, I'll meet you at the fairgrounds. Or I'll meet you at a shop to get a coffee. Mm-hmm. And so that would be where much of the services would be provided. And it reduces the overhead for the organization when that is the case, and it's more comfortable often for the clients.
But this vet is not getting the services. That's why he was so concerned.
Oh, so he was trying to obtain the service and couldn't get it.
Right, because he said they've moved.
Uh-huh.
So I'm, yeah.
So he lost connection with them.
He did.
Okay.
He did.
I could look into it, but I know, because I've been in touch with Mark Casapoli a lot recently
What about Gavin and Sean, is it, who actually...
Yes, Kevin speaks to Mark a lot, and
okay.
I my understanding was that, like, we were trying to get this money to them as quickly as possible so there's no gap in services. So my impression was that there had been no gap. I can ask about where it has been actually taking place, though.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions or points of discussion? All right, so with that, I'll call the question on Resolution 396. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
And I didn't warn you, but I'm going to recuse myself on Resolution 400.
Okay. Got that, Jay. Great. Resolution 400, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with Access Supports for Living, Inc. for office space at 368 Broadway to the Department of Public Works. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
And second. A second by Erner. All right. Deputy Contreras, do you want to give us a little bit of background on this?
Sure.
Or I don't know who would be best for.
I can start on the lease side. So this will be the first lease that we execute at 368 Broadway as the owner of the building. The proposal is, or the terms are $11 per square foot, which matches what this organization currently pays in Golden Hill. They would also be paying for the cost of renovation in their unit. Currently, they occupy one unit, and they want to...
It's one on one side, and then it's two.
They occupy
yes.
two, and they want to move into a third.
They want to consolidate onto one side of the floor, and then expand out to, I think it'll be three units, yes.
Right. And so there's also a clause in there that any increase, if utility costs increase by over 4%, then they would be responsible for the overage in the future. Their ability to expand into the space means that they'll be able to serve significantly more people, hundreds of people a month, and providing mental health services.
Great. Wonderful. Any questions from the committee? Yep, Legislator Erner. And then Petit.
Thank you. Can someone clarify that I had heard that they are currently located at Golden Hill. I'd also heard 368. Where are they right now?
They have multiple locations.
So the mobile mental health team has the office at Golden Hill. They also have an office at Trudy Barber. They have a presence at 368 with two of their clinical programs.
And that's all, but that's all Access has those spaces, or the broader mobile mental health has those spaces?
Access Supports for Living has those spaces.
Okay, thank you.
Legislator Petit?
I think my question was answered. No. So they're looking to take on additional space to expand their services. At what point are we going to be ready to open up for an RFP? Because I believe People right now is operating the Crisis Stabilization Center in Poughkeepsie and doing a very good job of it. Or are we planning on Access doing that? Is that
no.
why they're expanding?
No. People USA will also be doing the Crisis Stabilization Center here in Ulster County. They're the lead operator for that service.
Okay.
What Access is doing is that they right now have a behavioral health urgent care that has a very small footprint. It's only one peer, one clinician. What they're wanting to do is just have this space act as a regular OMH licensed clinic, which would mean that they would be bringing on additional clinicians, a nurse, and there will be a full-fledged outpatient clinic. We right now have wait lists. I'm so excited for the opportunity to be able to offer the service, though.
Well, if you're excited, then I'm excited.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? And then we'll call the question on Resolution 400. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
And I'm
one abstention.
Abstaining on the basis that Samadhi Center rents at this same location from the county. And I am the volunteer president of Samadhi.
Resolution 397, approving the execution of a contract for $150,000 entered into by the county with Anderson Medical, doing business as Emergency One Urgent Care and Diagnostic Center through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll
move it. Moved by Nolan, a second. Second by Petit. Commissioner Iposi, do you want to give us a little bit of background here?
Sure. I had disseminated a description that I hope reached all the committee members. It's fairly straightforward. This is a service provider that performs the drug screening for primarily our children and family services population who participate in submitting to drug testing as a result of court orders, preventative services, and other arrangements. So it's a fairly standard service that we provide, and this is to be able to keep that intact going forward.
That was just my question. Simon, think they got it.
If it was in the backup, I don't remember getting an email about that.
Okay.
If you could send that to the committee, that would be
sure.
Great.
Sure. Okay.
My question was going to be who the population is that we're testing.
Yeah.
But that answers the question. Yeah. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. There's it says the same gender shall do the test, something along those lines. Considering. I don't know, there's not a certain number of set genders, like are they taking into account folks who are any number of genders besides cis male, cis female, and...
We rely on the fact that they are. The drug screenings are conducted at urgent care, so we have not received any feedback from the population who's required to participate in the testing that they've had issues with that.
So in the medical clinics that I know about, the person would be able to identify their own gender and then have a person who is that same gender. So it's not a assigned gender and then matched, but a self-identified gender in the clinics that I'm familiar with, and I would expect that would be the case.
Right.
That would generate no complaints.
Okay. One of the reasons we moved to have a service provider perform this activity for us was that previously it had been undertaken occasionally by staff at DSS, but as a result of some of the issues that were starting to present themselves, we felt it would be more appropriate to have a medical facility administer the drug screenings because it does have to be witnessed in order to confirm the validity of the sample, which has been tested.
Any other questions? All right, with that, I'll call the question on 397. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 397 is unanimous. Approving the execution of a contract amendment for $25,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Anderson Medical doing business. This is a different one? No. Did I read the same one again?
No, this is a different one.
Okay.
Different
also with Emergency One Urgent Care and Diagnostic Center, through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I will also move it.
Thank you.
And I'll second.
Great. What's the population on this?
Same population,
okay.
Same service. It's for a number of tests that were administered in the second quarter of this year that we needed to increase the last biannual contract.
Okay. With that, I'll call the question, unless there's further discussion, but I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 398 is unanimous. Resolution 399, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with the New Village View SPLLC, Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
And a second?
Second.
All right. And Commissioner Iaposi, if you want to, or whoever would like to give us a little bit of background on this.
Sure, I'll give it a try. Spent a lot of time over the last couple of days just nailing down exactly what was happening here. So it appears that the assisted living program that reached out to DSS requesting that we enter into this contract with them is the New Village View SPLLC. They operate an assisted living program. They were formerly the New Village View LLC. So paying close attention, the one small change was that they added New Village View SPLLC. In order to be able to continue to provide assisted living program services to their residents, they contacted us and indicated they were required to have this contract in place, and this is where I'll do my best to try to articulate this clearly. Many of the assisted living program residents have community Medicaid, and they are paying the fees to be in the assisted living program privately, but they are on Medicaid. In the event that they need non-assisted living program services that are medical, they will use their Medicaid to pay for those services. And the provider...
That's Dean Fabiano. I'm going to hang up on you, Dean.
Sorry. That was good music. Good background to my description here. But at any rate, so when the assisted living program resident needs medical services, they will receive those, and they will be billed through their Medicaid case. This allows the assisted living program, who has medical providers at their facility administering those medical services, to bill their residents. The expectation is we will not be receiving...
I put that on agenda. Just start having
the tune changed a little bit because we're reaching a high point of the explanation.
Eventually we'll get there.
So again, I'll pick up where I left off. The expectation is we're not going to be invoiced at all for any medical services because they're billed through the individual resident's Medicaid. But as I think you're all aware, we have a Medicaid cap in Ulster County, and we pay a weekly share towards that annual cap. And the expectation is that the amount that might be billed that comprises a part of that overall Ulster County Medicaid bill could be included in amounts that are billed through this assisted living program. So I hope that that makes sense to the degree that that's why they're indicating this contract needs to be in place with the county department that
right.
administers Medicaid.
Legislator Novak, go ahead.
Yeah, so would it be fair to say that this contract makes Ulster County a backstop on that? Is that what you described?
I wouldn't even say that we're a backstop because, again, the assisted living program resident who has an open Medicaid case, their Medicaid case is going to be billed for the medical services that they receive. And we're not even going to be involved in participating in that billing transaction. We're involved in the fact that the person has an open Medicaid case in Ulster County. And
so
their eligibility was determined. So it contributes
to it's an administrative
yes.
relationship
yes.
that we need to formalize.
Right.
And that's why there's no dollar value.
Well,
on this.
We are recognizing that it could exceed $50,000.
Right, but I didn't see
the assisted living program residents at this facility could incur overall, collectively, amounts against the Medicaid program that exceed $50,000. Even one resident could potentially, depending on the kind of medical services they receive. But I wanted to highlight that that's not going to be invoiced and paid through Ulster County DSS. That's paid through the New York State Medicaid program.
And we're very confident, and this has been reviewed by legal, to make sure that that's totally what's happening here.
Yes, I'm confident our legal unit, our contract paralegal, you know, and the remaining skills I have as a contract attorney, that I hope haven't deteriorated. I think all of that, you know, very accurately reflects what this agreement obligates us to.
Great. Any other questions? Yep, Legislator Petit.
Thank you. It does read that there, in order to get the assisted living assistance, that it has to go through DSS. Does that mean you don't review it before people need the medical treatment? I mean, that's HC medical treatment held up while it's getting approved, and then the second part of that will be what happens when they do meet that threshold. Or
there,
does New York State not have a threshold?
We have a cap.
You do
and the way that the cap works is that we contribute a weekly share that doesn't exceed our annual cap. and then the state covers everything that's over that cap. So there is no threshold.
Okay. And there's no extra layer, so there'd be no delay in medical treatment if it was okay.
Right.
A lot of these people have private insurance too? Or secondary or supplemental?
I wouldn't be able to know what, you know, the residents' data on that is. I know that many are on fixed incomes and they're able to pay the amount required to be residing in assisted living, you know, but that is below nursing home care. So assisted living is not paid for through Medicaid.
Any other questions? All right, if not, I will call the question on Resolution 399. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 399 is unanimous. Resolution 421, requiring dedicated space within the workplace for nursing mothers employed by Ulster County. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Stewart in a second.
Second
by, I'm going to give it to Petit as one of the sponsors, and I will pass the baton to Petit, to Legislator Petit again.
Thank you.
To give us a little background here.
So this this resolution has been, well, it's been near and dear. I didn't realize because my youngest one is 30, and, you know, having to escape into the only bathroom that was in the building in order to get a few minutes to, you know, fill bottles and then put it upstairs in the refrigerator, which was a community refrigerator, and actually had a male staff person come down once and said, I hope that milk in the bottle was okay. You know, it was in a jar because I put it in my coffee. and I had a female employee whose youngest one, I think, is three now, say the same thing, that she had to go into our ladies' room here in the county office building in order to get a few minutes to pump. I mean, it is already a state law. However, we're not providing a dedicated room for them to feel comfortable and like they're not imposing on anyone. I mean, part of the law says, well, they could even still use a space that's made available, but is that space always available and is there a dedicated refrigerator? You have a minority room up here. You could get a couple of keys made for that. this just gives women who choose to breastfeed their babies that opportunity and making it comfortable. It's a very uncomfortable situation to be in, hiding in a stall.
Legislator Nolan and then Stewart.
Yeah, I strongly support having the spaces. I have some questions about what we might already have available and the thinking of how this will work out since we do have staff in multiple locations around the county. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have a policy on it, but I'd like to know the practical implications and whether or not the way this is written will strike the right balance between providing something adequate and comfortable with not being more expensive than is necessary.
Do you want to respond to that?
I had the same question, and I really appreciate this resolution. I've definitely been in this position myself, and I'm very, very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking right away, how we could make this a guarantee. And the only place I was thinking in here that would be, like always, almost always private, there's not really a place, right? Maybe. I did think about the minority office, I just don't know how often that's used.
You can have it.
The Democrats, I think, would have to, make the same pledge that, if there's the minority was in a different count, that we would also.
Yeah.
But
it
does seem like it would get more used than it gets used now.
It's really important, but I would like to know or find out if there are scenarios where it's not possible for whatever reason, and if we could build in some language for that.
Does DSS have extra a room that could be dedicated?
I was just
going to
comment, how appreciative we would be, because this is a scenario that we frequently have to address, and we make accommodations by carving out space based on know, the preferences and schedule of that particular employee. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't been insurmountable. But if there were the opportunity to permanently dedicate a space, I know it would be greatly appreciated. And I'm sure that we could find somewhere that we would be able to do that in the spirit of the resolution.
Is it the position of the county executive's office that we could move forward with this, or are you asking that we give you time to figure out the feasibility of it?
Is it, I haven't looked at the language very, very closely. Is it like it's a mandate, a guarantee?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Can we do like a survey of each department to figure out what the possibility is? Okay.
So do you want to postpone a month then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Legislator Stewart.
Yep.
I was just going to say, I think this is a great resolution, and I was going to thank Legislator Petit for bringing this forward. I recently toured the Cresco facility down in Ellenville, and they had a really nice set-aside space specifically for this reason. And Tim Wiedemann, who was still working for the county at that point, I said, oh, this is a great idea. We should, mandate this. And he said that the county was working hard to do that already.
Oh.
So I wasn't quite sure.
Maybe he meant, like, in the context of the state study?
Perhaps. Perhaps that's what he was referring to.
I'll check
so.
Yeah. It'd be good to link it in with that.
Yeah,
for sure.
But it was great seeing a private company like that stepping forward and designating a space specifically for that reason.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well, with that, we can
make a motion that we postpone for 1 month and to get move this along.
Great. And a second on that from Legislator Lopez. Any discussion on the postponement? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so that is postponed 1 month, 421. 423, establishing policy to reform social services, temporary assistance housing. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Erner, and second by Stewart. And Legislator Erner, if you want to give us a little bit of background on this, I believe this is your resolution.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair Uchitel. And so, as the policy states, this comes from recommended improvements from client experiences in our Department of Social Services. And I believe Deputy Executive Contreras and I went over the bulk of these fairly before I submitted them, at least in broad strokes. Some of them also came from a conversation that some of us had had before the end of last year, I believe involving Commissioner Iposi and Deputy Executive Contreras. So some of this isn't new at all. Some of it's a little more new, but I would be happy to hear the committee's opinion if you want to go by each resolved, as well as the administration's.
Anyone else have questions, comments? Go ahead, Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I'm really not sure exactly where to start. I think the notion that we need to reform social services maybe sets me in a position of feeling that we haven't adequately looked at what social services does. And I think that the proposals here, in the absence of any research or data to show which of them will be helpful, how much any one of them would cost, I think looking at existing programs that we have that do a lot of this kind of work and seeing where we can scale those, where there are gaps. But this to me is a policy that doesn't feel well connected to our existing services. And so it's aspirational. But when you suggest walking through the whereases, I think any one of these proposals could generate an extensive conversation. And bringing them all together like this just puts me in a position of really feeling like I don't know where to start, and can't really feel like it that I understand the benefits and the cost and the unintended consequences of some of these proposals.
Further, anyone else? I'll just say, you know, there are some of these that kind of seem to fall into the category of turning the DSS office into a 24-hour shelter, and that I have some serious concerns about, considering the requirements of what shelters provide. I appreciate the spirit here for sure, and I know that the county executive's team is also working, and perhaps you can hear from them in a moment, on a broader look at the emergency housing journey for users. This seems to kind of jump to the finish line and put a bunch of policies in place that I feel could have some unintended consequences, such as, you know, changing the hours of an office whose hours are stipulated by state statute. So I have some concerns about that. But I very much appreciate the spirit of improving services. I'm concerned about the details here. And if there's no one else from the committee that wants to comment on this, I would like to hear from the county executive's team.
Sure. I can start with where you just left off in terms of the evaluation. Just wanted to provide an update. So we had released an RFP with the idea of hiring a firm that could do a deep and broad look at our emergency housing system and provide us with some recommendations on policy and programmatic changes. Unfortunately, we didn't get proposals that we feel like we could really go to bat for or feel justified in spending the money that they were asking. So we're trying to figure out, like, we believe we have a way forward by dedicating internal resources. Like, we already asked Rebecca, our assistant deputy county executive, to start putting information together in like a report format. I know Dennis has given some thought to working with some other organizations to do it on a much smaller scale, getting them to collect the data that we need, getting them to do some of the focus groups and interviews. So we're trying to figure out how to do that deep dive, but because it is important for us to feel like there's some grounding in any kind of major changes that we make, and, you know, a look at all the, you know, possible consequences and also the budget implications. Some of these have, there's a big spectrum of items on this list, but some of them have major budget implications, like the one I'm thinking of is the one that commits us to accommodating the range of all emergency housing clients in public emergency housing shelters. And I know that we've just started to kind of take a small bite out of that problem with Elizabeth Manor, and that's like, you know, it's a challenging process to go through. So the idea that we could scale up to 300 or so people being housed in public shelters is a big, obviously, a major undertaking, and that's just one of the items.
Yep, Legislator Lopez?
You know, I share the concerns that are mentioned. I think from a macro perspective, like it, I get it. There's a lot of change that have to be made. I think from a micro perspective, though, this is, and from a legal perspective, I know that I'm waiting to hear back from counsel about if any of this can even be implemented. You know, maybe some on smaller scales. I just think it's a lot, and it's a lot that's packed into, you know, a resolution. And yeah, I wouldn't feel comfortable moving, you know, forward on this until, you know, I had at least you know, some clarification from council to know what, how much, or if any of it, I, you know, is even possible.
I would, if I may, I would like to ask, you know, if it's possible, I mean, I will suggest, you know, from my perspective, that we postpone this, but I would love for the, I would love to hear responses to some of these proposals. Some of them might be more feasible than we expect that they would be, particularly the proposals around the client experience in the office. That's something that, you know, we might be able to get some quick wins out of. So if it's possible in the intervening time, assuming that the postponement is what happens tonight, I would love to hear some responses, almost like line item, to these resolved clauses, if that's possible.
So in response to that question...
You don't have to do it tonight. I'm just saying
I get anything is possible. This resolution essentially suggests changes of such a significant and enormous manner, you know, that we can certainly respond, and it's not necessarily something that I think should, and I don't think it is, falling solely on the shoulders of DSS. You know, under circumstances where we had vast resources, unlimited staffing, and unilateral jurisdiction to do all of this on our own, to have Ulster County create its own emergency housing programs that did not rely on any other kind of state or federal programming or compliance with eligibility criteria for those programs, you know, perhaps this could be contemplated. But in terms of the overall possibility, at a time when DSS has the responsibility of administering emergency housing within the system that exists, it's challenging. You know, we will do our level best, obviously working closely with the county executive's office, and there are some of the suggestions that we have asked for support around our space, the space study that's being undertaken.
Yeah.
We had those persons tour our facility, and we have been, you know, requesting an expansion of our waiting area for many years. It hasn't been able to be arrived at. And again, you know, I say this in the context of how we arrive at implementing changes. These are not things that DSS could do by simply collaborating with Public Works. And I think, you know, Deputy Executive Contreras points out the amount of effort that's being expended to try to establish an additional family shelter. Not that these things are not achievable, but I think they can only be achieved with a really massive collaboration by a lot of different entities at the county level to initially decide their feasibility, and then if they are feasible, how we might be able to implement them to complement existing programs. So that's my reaction.
Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, that's very helpful, I think, because that articulates one of my concerns here, which is that there's so much in this that it is hard for me to see what we can do within the existing system or what would require a complete dismantling and rebuilding of systems. And I'm not opposed to completely dismantling something if you can handle the transition cost and it's clear where you're going, and where you're going is, can be sustained. So rather than ask for a postponement, I would wonder if we could ask the sponsor to consider withdrawing this resolution and working with the executive's office to identify those places where a simple shift in policy now will change something, and to look at where the county can enter into that visioning process. What you know, a community that is going to make changes of this nature, even if it was just my town, you know, they're going to do a comprehensive plan that would change how they're doing so much in the town, would do a couple of year-long visioning process. And so I feel like we've got a solution that is brought in and proposed here, but it, to me, as I said before, it doesn't feel tethered to the community. And that means the community of people who would use these services, but also the larger community that where everyone resides and that funds all these programs. So I think that looking at the achievable elements of this and then looking at the bigger elements that may be achievable but would need that bigger process would be helpful to me, because I think I'm going to find it difficult to vote on this resolution. I'm in some ways surprised it came to us from the clerks with so many different things in it. You know, each resolution is supposed to have its own name and what it does. And, you know, this, so maybe the title is correct, but when you say we're going to reform DSS, I have to vote no on that because there are elements that I want to maintain and elements that I want to change. So I think, pulling out resolutions and policies that we can work on right away and those that are longer term and those that midterm would be very helpful to getting my support and excitement about, you know, looking at, okay, yeah, this is the element that we need to change. And instead of having to say that, I don't know where we start with this that doesn't cause gaps in services.
Anyone else? Yeah.
Can I just make another point for overall? I think a few of these resolves are more on the administrative side, less so policy. Mm-hmm. So I'm just looking at, I think there's one of them that was DSSTA shall communicate in person with clients. That's one. And then there's another one that says, DSS shall compensate clients for participating in an evaluation. Basically, like, those are not in practice anything that I would oppose, and I think that we have definitely been responsive to your recommendations on implementation, but I think those conversations are better had as collaborations between the two departments, and it's not something that seems appropriate for a legislative resolution as a policy making body.
Legislator Renner.
Okay, first of all, I want to thank everyone for your comments and criticisms and suggestions here. On just the last point by Deputy Executive Contreras, I respect the difference between operations and policy. If the people of Ulster County are having a certain experience and they come to me and say that this is not going well, and I come to the administration or come to the department and you are responsive, that's great. And how do we then ensure that that's always going to happen going forward? Don't we need to have a policy generally so that not only to ensure it, but also so that the public knows what to expect and is going on? Do you see what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think, if I may respond just from the legislative perspective, because I'm typically pretty bullish on legislative authority to set policy, but the way, I think one of the, where the line perhaps exists is when there are programs that are in place, that's very much under our purview, and there's budgeting, you know, things like that. But when you're talking about directing individual employees on the way that they do their job, like, you know, talk to this person this way and not that way, that is something that's important to maintain their relationship with their management structure and their reporting structure. And so I find that the line often exists there when you're kind of interceding on the relationship between a manager and their employees. I find that to be a kind of a good litmus test for operational work that is not necessarily policy, policy setting in the traditional sense.
I would add that I think when a better way of working is established, it tends to maintain itself. So the idea that we have to create lines that point people to every good place we want to go, I think can tangle us up. Whereas the problem solving in the workplace can get you to some better outcomes. That does require that you have, from the executive side, good hiring policies, good employee human relations support. And so I think that asking the executive side what they need in order to implement best practices, and maybe even some policies around having best practices, that if they're out there, some guidelines, those to me sound more helpful and kind of organic in the lived world than just taking a pencil and saying this is the way that I would like it to be. I think that getting the information about what isn't working, which I think is important, is good, but finding out how that system developed and where it can change easily is really important as well. So if you say you have to take off the whole left side of a building, it's a little different than if you say you have to replace the windows and doors. And I don't know, in all of the circumstances that have been brought into this resolution, which are sides of the building and which are windows and doors. So digging into each one of these recommendations, where it came from, what needs to be done, and then doing problem solving with a group of people to find out, well, what would be a good way, given the current constraints. That would have, to me, good problem solving comes from that kind of data and real groundedness, and has more lasting results than the best intention policy coming down that isn't connected in that way.
Legislator Erner?
So my only worry is that there's nobody in this room right now who is, as far as I know, a DSS temporary assistance housing client. So that point of view can only appear in here through testimony that any of us give either on behalf of our constituents, our clients, or whatever other experience we might have. So I just want to remind us of that, lest we not feel some urgency here, because each of these recommendations does come from people who are in dire straits. Yes, they have a point of view, and it's not the only one. I would not like to withdraw this. I would be happy if the committee just took no action right now, and I certainly am thrilled to go work with the administration committee members during the next month and try and come back with something better.
I would be comfortable with that. If folks don't feel strongly about a formal postponement, we can move on to the next resolution. Resolution number 424, establishing a policy to track all temporary housing facilities on a daily basis. And I have a motion to discuss.
So moved.
And a second. All right. Legislator Erner, do you want to give us some background?
Yes. So Deputy Executive Contreras and I have talked about this, and it's my understanding that DSS and whoever else needs to do this is doing this now, and so it would seem that this policy is already in operation and not necessary for us to pass. So, does anybody in the committee think that otherwise?
I believed it to be already in place. I knew from the, particularly their most recent effort to move folks from the roadway, it was very clear that this work was happening.
And my question had been what the different methods were that was taking place, but some of us heard from the commissioner that about personal visits by the commissioner, checking on online booking. I know making calls is a thing, and the traditional systems seem to be in place. So I feel much more confident after all of that we are doing everything we can to enact this.
And I would say in this case that this kind of work is so labor intensive that a policy that requires any kind of monitoring and reporting about how it's being done can actually tangle it up. So I greatly appreciate removing that constraint. I think that we do have a form for monthly reports of, you know, things that are going well and things that aren't going well and check-ins. But again, once you formalize it as a policy and it's an absolute requirement, then somebody can be trained to meet the requirement instead of active problem solving that may not technically fit, but that actually serves the client better. And we see a lot of that kind of innovation going on for Somati clients when they interface with DSS and with family and with our, you know, with us. With Somati in terms of who Somati can provide housing for. So I think this is, again, that realm where let the executive office execute, and if we are finding that that's not happening well, then we can troubleshoot.
All right, so if there's no further discussion yet, legislator, proceed.
I mean, we do have limited emergency housing, and, you know, it's been said before, because we've been tossing around, you know, various, you know, compliance policies, you know, that they are inspected and that they don't have bed bugs and they don't have, and, you know, I understand part of it is that we don't have enough emergency shelters, that if we were to close any of them down, and there's several that are in very bad shape, where would we put our people? So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that you're aware of it. We've spoken before, Director Iposi, that, you know, there's pest control requirements and that they do require a refrigerator and a microwave. And we also have Ulster Community Action that's doing, I think there's 16 emergency shelters. But I mean, beyond that, where there's been photos taken of bloody mattresses and cockroaches and bed bugs, and, you know, beyond that, I don't know if I want to totally drop this or not.
Well, I don't think this speaks to those. I think this is just about, this is about, this is about, yeah, I believe this is about vacancies and, like, the process of, like, information around where people can be placed. I don't think this is around,
because
we did,
like,
I did a few years ago, I looked into whether we can legislate conditions at boarding houses and, you know, I think hotels would fall into the same kind of category, and it was not something that we had the ability to do, because I tried to do that with boarding homes, and it was a state building code. It, like so many things, housing, it came down to state preemption.
Reading in one of the other whereases, and yes, okay, you are already doing that with hotels. Okay. All right, I didn't read it the right way. Thank you.
No problem. So if everyone's comfortable, we can move on with taking no action on this, or if you know, and Bill, you can do, you know, if you wanted to withdraw it, if that's what you decide to do, you could do that, but you don't have to decide that. That can happen at any time.
Yeah.
So I'm not hearing a vocal chorus saying no, so we can move on. I will read the last formal resolution for tonight before we get into the old and new and forthcoming. So. Resolution 425, establishing a policy to liberalize access to public spaces for survival. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Petit, second by Erner. And legislator Erner, if you want to give us some, if you want to kind of
frame this for us?
Yeah, there's a material and a philosophical basis for this. The material basis being that many people in Ulster County right now don't have permanent homes, have very tenuous situations in their homes, and how to thinking creatively about how we can, as the title suggests, liberalize access to the public space we already have so that folks might be able to take care of their basic needs, whether it's a roof over their head that exists, or they maybe can construct a place to bathe, a place to prepare food, some of the real basics that many of our constituents struggle with every day, whether they're in temporary housing or so-called permanent housing. The philosophical aspect, which ties back to it, is, and I'll share it because I believe it's pertinent, at least for me, which is that if you don't have guaranteed access to private real property where you can rest your head at night, then what do you have? Shouldn't you have access to the public's property? Doesn't the public's property belong to the people? Now, normally we collectively decide how that space is being used, but I'd like to suggest that maybe we need to think differently about it, and perhaps we're gatekeeping some spaces that people who are struggling could make use of to, again, exercise their basic means of survival. But again, the philosophical side is that if it's public property, when you have, there's public and there's private property, then the people should have the right to that which is public. And so that's the basic introduction.
So we, the emergency housing subgroup that I chaired last year, that met roughly monthly for the year, did look at this kind of proposal quite closely. Actually not that closely. We could go back and do it again, because what I think we came to was that we didn't know which types of approaches had been successful other places, and that would be helpful to know which types of approaches had gotten into trouble, like tent cities, use of shipping containers, campground type approaches. We had a list, and we had looked at each one of them. And what we came to was that there were shared concerns that go across all of them, and so we didn't do that next level dive. We could, you know, and I would want to before putting in place a policy like this, but the next level down is, how do you deal with issues of safety and security? How do you deal with provision of clean water to groups of people in a setting that isn't set up for that? How do you deal with waste in that same setting? How do you deal with food and food preparation? And a host of other concerns about how do you manage that site, because there are existing public spaces that the county manages to allow people to come that have some of that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And in those sites, we end up with conflicts between the individuals and conflicts with the individuals and whatever structure is proposed. So how do you, in those sites where you don't have solid physical infrastructure, address and reasonably, manage the problems that you could expect to arise, and then how do you pay for it all? So, based on all of that, our working group felt that we didn't see a path forward. But part of it was we didn't have anybody who wanted to lead, into that exploration. And if I think this resolution says that we have at least one legislator who is interested in that, and I'm interested in it. I think there have been some interesting experiments across the country, And if we could look at whether any of them were in a place, you know, the similar size and, you know, with similar resources available, and they worked and were good, I would be happy for us to pilot them and, you know, like really find the one or two that look like that actually helps people. And follow up on that.
I basically agree with everything you said. I mean, I was thinking about this as a regards to, like, say, warehouse space that the county might own, or unused office space that the county might own. But then I was like, well, how do you deal with the issues, like you said, of restroom facilities and you know, safety as far as, you know, actions that could be taken by the people who are actually in the facility itself, but also, you know, fire safety, and which is a huge concern, and you know, safety as it relates to public health. So, you know, I just kind of saw this as opening up a big can of worms that we might not really be able to, you know, see all the potential outcomes that could arise. And I think it also opens up the county to, like, a good deal of liability in situations like we just discussed. What I thought this... what you mentioned about this task force, wow, what a cool thing. I think maybe we should look into resurrecting that task force and, you know, perhaps investigate some of these options more fully. And that would be something that I would certainly support and something that I would like to take in. So.
If there's no other comments on the committee, I'll just share my thoughts. You know, the working groups, I think, have been helpful. And we've actually, the low-income and affordable housing working group, we've continued to meet and still are meeting monthly. So I think I would fully support them, you know, the one on emergency housing kind of being revived. You know, the much like an earlier resolution, I think one of the things that's happening, that would be happening were this to be implemented, is it would be essentially turning county space into kind of self-managed shelters, and you know, the many. It's very, very, very frustrating that our efforts to create a county-run shelter are taking longer than we wanted with Elizabeth Manor, just to use one example. But all of the regulations and the process of becoming certified to do that, all of those rules came from somewhere. They came from a time when we did not treat folks experiencing poverty, folks experiencing mental illness, folks experiencing substance abuse. We did not treat them with compassion. We let communities that are experiencing those challenges be in unmanaged facilities, in self-governed environments, and it was dangerous. And you can look at you know, history from the 19th century with the way they did things in New York City, with different types of homes, that was, you know, egregious. Even in you know, the second half of the 20th century, there were things in New York that were also egregious with the way that people experiencing crisis were treated in institutions. All of the rules that we have today were intended to protect people that are experiencing those things. And I worry that by diving headfirst into the county just saying, well, we're going to go back to kind of self-managed emergency housing environments, self-managed, you know, we'll give you a corner of this county property and you guys figure it out, we will quickly find ourselves learning the lessons of why we have the regulations today that protect vulnerable populations. So that's my concern here.
I agree with Legislator Nolan on this. I think there are programs out there that work. I was watching one where a not-for-profit app actually opened up an enclosed parking space that during the day people would pay whatever, $25 to leave their car there. And they'd have to sign in. There was a list of rules that they needed to follow. And then it had to be out by a certain time of day. Even Walmart allows parking. You know, not setting up campsites, I don't know how then you're going to run into the real issues. But, yeah, I'd certainly like to see, I'd be happy to participate, you know, in finding some something that would work without having to worry about a permanent tent city getting set up, which could come with all the issues.
Yep, legislator Nolan.
One other area that we didn't follow as far as we probably should is that historically churches have provided shelter, and I think it would be well worthwhile to reach out to churches throughout the county and find out what they're doing. I think there's been a movement to try to have from the churches to try to have people that come to them for assistance go to a family or go someplace else rather than be housed congregately. And our shelters serve a good purpose, yet a lot of people don't find them satisfactory, and so they're not going to find a church shelter to be satisfactory either. But I do think that the churches have a role here in terms of making available or helping people find spaces that have plumbing and running water and electricity or some way to keep foods cold or hot, and meet people with services if they need them. So I appreciate, again, the intent of the resolution, and if this committee wants to work on this, maybe legislator would lead it, or I'd be happy to revive the group we had, and we could get, across the country, a lot of different things have been tried. And there's now enough time that you can get, I think you need 5 or 10 year history on this, because I do know of some things that were tried and were very successful initially and then were not able to be sustained. Yeah. And then you're spending money to go through an exercise instead of finding the best solution and investing our resources there.
Deputy Executive Contreras?
Yes, I was thinking about, and piggybacking off of your last point, one of the things that we've been looking into is the Segunda Iglesia Church and whether we can extend the hours of that warming center to be year-round, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to do the research so that we can bring it, assess it with a cost, and bring it all to you if it looks feasible, and if there is an operator that can actually do this, if the cost makes sense. So we had engaged Catholic Charities in that conversation, but that's just one. I feel like maybe it would be, it sort of seems along the lines of the resolution, because it's not a public space per se, but it is a place where people could go that is publicly funded, where they can be inside, and it's not a shelter, but it is a, but neither would a county government building. So just another idea that we're researching.
I was on that committee that has convened those meetings, and a lot of our discussion focused on trying to, for purposes of accommodating the current emergency housing population, find existing capacity that had infrastructure that could be immediately accessed. Because the reality is, we don't have time to wait a month, 3 months, 6 months. And that's challenging, because maybe there is infrastructure out there that has the capacity to immediately be accessed. One of the ideas that we have proposed, which Deputy County Contreras just mentioned, is the expansion of the location at Elmendorf Street, not from a warming center, but a 24-hour walk-in center. But it's important that I say these next few things, because I think that they cut to the heart of the matter. It's been alluded to that no matter what you arrive at establishing, there has to be some structure, some rules and regulations, some agreement by the clients who access this space to conduct themselves in a certain way, to be considerate and respectful of others, and exhibit behaviors and conduct and decision-making that exhibits that. One of the biggest challenges that we have faced with the operation of the warming center, and which our provider, Catholic Charities, has reported back to us, is the need to expand their staffing to include behavioral specialists to be on staff whenever we have an activation to address some of the incidences that unfold among the population that's going into the warming center. I'm talking about mental health breakdowns, substance abuse overdoses, assaults between guests. And this is where all of these ideas are still very worthwhile, but have to take into consideration when we have a walk-in center and we've addressed this need, and as Legislature Erna referred to, somebody can go in, and maybe there's cooking facilities or washing facilities or hygiene facilities. You can do your laundry, take a shower, cook yourself a meal, maybe get some rest in a reclining chair or a cot. And all that is perfectly something that I think we should anticipate trying to provide. But when there's an incident among the guests in these facilities and staff engages with them and indicates that they can no longer remain there, it's at that particular moment that we have an unserviceable client who then feels like their needs aren't being met. And where does that person go when they're not able to be accommodated in locations, at places where we're providing services and supports, but they're essentially unserviceable because of their conduct? And their conduct may have its origins in other trauma that is a result of the crisis they find themselves in that makes it difficult to manage their behavior. But this is a very real problem, and we started to allude to it in a meeting I attended earlier this afternoon, is we see this happening, where we have clients who are facing such overwhelming issues that it's becoming more and more difficult to accommodate them in our existing system. We're not finding motels or hotels that will accept a reservation for them. The shelters will not accept a reservation, or their preference is not to go to a shelter. And these are all dynamics that are very challenging. They're very real, and we have to think of incredibly thoughtful ways to address them without alienating this portion of our population who we still have an obligation to serve. And I want to be, you know, very thoughtful about how I describe that, because it's a real reality. We had a real heart-to-heart with Catholic Charities, and they're at a crossroads. They don't know if they can continue to be our service provider or the warming center because of the episodic situations they're having to address during activations, which endanger the rest of the guests at a warming center. But then you have that individual who feels like they're kicked out of the warming center. And the reality is that there was an underlying incident that made it impossible for them to be accommodated at the warming center. But that doesn't mean we still don't want to have ways to help that person. Maybe the opening of the Crisis Stabilization Center will provide, you know, some sort of respite for at least 24 hours. But the longer-term issues are addressing these individuals with the serious problems they have that put them in this cycle of being difficult to service, but at the same time create real challenges for the supports and services and programs that we do have. So I just offer that. I think a walk-in center could probably help an enormous number of people. And if we incurred that cost as a county and had a service provider in there operating it and providing oversight and support, probably 99% of the people that accessed it would benefit. But it's the 1% sometimes that is going to still require our consideration and support, and it's how do we do that? And that's an important dynamic in emergency housing services or walk-in centers or warming centers. And it's very real.
And to follow up on that, because it really shouldn't all be on DSS. Oh, Commissioner McDonald has left our Commissioner of Mental Health, but it is a continuum that we need. And Commissioner Iapozzi mentioned the Crisis Stabilization Center that we're hoping will help. There's also the Crisis Residence, which we are hoping will also help and provide a longer-term stay. Just to give an update on that, we did look at properties, but given, you know, Elizabeth Manor, all the properties we have going on right now, it didn't seem like the right time to embark on buying another property. So we had asked the operator to see if they would be willing to look for a space themselves, and they actually ended up identifying People USA identified the same property that we were looking at in Ellenville on 34 Market Street as being ideal location, which I thought was a good sign. So, but now they're trying to figure out if, like, what do they need, basically, for the space in order to be able to stand that up. So I'm hoping to be able to come back to you all with a way forward on that project, too, because we need a whole continuum. It can't just all be on DFS to figure out how to house and support people who have real mental health crises.
As we think about this, with climate chaos coming, I think having places that are available as cooling centers in addition to warming centers, and whether or not we can do anything creative in terms of offering support for retrofitting for electric air source heat pumps in places in exchange for opening up to clients, guests, and whether or not any of the behavioral issues that are that we experience and need to address can be minimized if we have fewer people in some of the places. Whether there are individuals who might be able to succeed if they are the only person or only one of two people. And we don't have as many of those places because they're more expensive. But looking to address the 99% and then see what we need to create to make sure that a person who can't fit in that system, you know, even for an overnight, has a place to be overnight.
There's one other consideration, which I've done a lot of outreach to the interfaith community, and some of the liability issues and concerns that they express is screening of individuals who are going to access their space, where they have parishioners that consist of children and families. One of the risks incurred with a walk-in center that doesn't necessarily require that someone divulge information about their circumstances or status is they could be a sex offender. They could be someone who poses a threat. They could be a domestic violence offender. And these are very real concerns. I think we have an incredibly willing interfaith community, and because zoning regulations permit them to utilize their space to provide shelter, I think there's interest in that, but there's hesitation around the nature of risk involved with screening the population who might access their facility if they make it available. And again, these are real and serious concerns that we don't want to not be supporting everyone in our community, but they have to be addressed in the context of standing up any kind of facility. And that's why, you know, with respect to the warming center, I think at least we have an example. We have a sample pool of what they've experienced in terms of operating that location and the experiences they've had and the needs that they're beginning to see that need to be met in order to continue to provide services in a warming center environment. And I think the needs are only going to expand. And that's one of the risks that you incur when you create a facility that is going to accommodate everyone from a population without there necessarily being any screening. So I just want to offer that. That was also an issue we talked about in our meeting.
I would like to hear more about Legislator Nolan's suggestion, because I've heard it before, too, here and there, of creating some sort of a green building energy efficiency incentive for hotels and motels to incentivize them to take more DSS clients. And I would love to just hear folks' reactions to that, because I think that it's a good idea, but I just wasn't sure. I think in some conversations it seems like, you know, there's an idea that the motels are already getting too much in their nightly rate, and do we really want to, you know, do we feel that we should be giving them more? So, but I wanted to explore this conversation further because I think it merits further discussion.
I will point out, though, that that is not directly germane to this resolution. We are
2 hours
and 15 minutes into this committee meeting. I think that is a really good conversation. I'm just thinking of all the things I want to say about it, and I'm imagining other people on the committee share similar verbose tendencies that I do. No offense, but I do want to keep us germane onto the germane topic of the day.
Okay.
Is that all right with everyone?
Sure.
Yes. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. For the commissioner's last comment, I respect where the commissioner is coming from, and persons who could be threatening, sex offender, violent offender, is someone presenting at a walk-in center more likely to have that status than anyone else on the street? If so, why? I'd like us to ask that question. And whose responsibility is it to defend the rest of the community, let's say, from any threat that exists versus to accommodate that person in the way that they need to be accommodated, whatever it might be?
I mean, there's the sex offender registry, which they're obligated to register depending upon their status, but sometimes there's not compliance, and that's one of the risks, and I understand it's a very challenging issue, and that's why I also reiterate it's trying to implement a program at a facility that addresses those issues in a thoughtful way to ensure that every measure is taken to prevent there from being an incident, but also to service everyone who might have needs. And this is the nature of the challenge, that frequently we have individuals involved in a variety of activities that don't necessarily comply with what their requirements are around how to behave or how to cooperate or collaborate, and that's a part of human nature. And I think we have to be realistic about that. But that doesn't mean that we still don't make every attempt to still accommodate needs that person has. And we see it frequently. And when we identify clients who begin to exhibit behaviors that are reported to us that are disrupting, we contact other entities that are responsible for their oversight. So frequently we have clients that are paroled or probationed or sex offenders, and it comes to our attention. We do the best that we can to the degree that we engage these other entities that have jurisdiction and responsibility to address those issues. But to the degree that we can be absolutely aware of what each person potentially might do at any point in time, it's just very challenging.
And it very well might be that we have criminals who are never held to any account, and we don't. That's just how that is.
And perhaps with that, I'm sensing a no action on this. Is that agreeable to the sponsor?
Yes.
Okay. So those are our resolutions for consideration for this session. We have two resolutions in old business. Both of them are mine, so I'll just say very quickly, with 126, I'm hoping that we can get the housing fund that the county executive has proposed incredibly thoughtfully. I'm hoping that we can see that advanced this month, and I appreciate everyone in this committee's support in doing that. I'm speaking not as the committee chair, but as the sponsor of that legislation, obviously, and because it's not, we got to get it across the finish line, so all the advocacy is, thank you in advance for that. 127, I think in light of the conversation with DSS, the emergency housing analysis, again, I'll continue to ask for no action on 127. We have a new business, the ADU design competition. Did you want to mention that, Dennis, just really quickly?
Only that it's going to take place. It'll be held down on the waterfront, and you should have a flyer that gives you the dates and times. It is essentially part of a $1.7 million grant that the county, city, and RUPCO got jointly to provide for the construction of accessory dwelling units. The city of Kingston in and of and by itself decided to sponsor a design competition. I'm hurt they've got a very robust response. So this should be an interesting, there's a panel discussion that's going to take place down there. The talk about accessory dwelling units, what they mean, how they're designed, how they fit into the community, et cetera. I would urge people to attend. We hope we get a lot of people down there with respect to that attendance. And we're working out all of the details now with RUPCO for the launch of the program. And that should launch, I would say, very, very shortly.
Thank you. Any questions? Yep. Legislator Nolan and then Petit.
I have another item of new business.
Okay, just on this topic, Legislator Petit, was your question on this?
Oh, you want to go back to the UCU?
Well, no,
I
want
to go back to your resolution 127.
Okay, well, all right, so we're on to new stuff now, so yeah. Let's go to Legislator Nolan and then Legislator Petit. Yeah.
I just want to mention a resolution that I have submitted this month, which you could call a policy on policies. It's Resolution 400, and it's going to go to Ways and Means because it addresses policies across multiple committees, and it's procurement primarily. But some of the policies from this committee would be addressed by it. And the idea is that any policy that Ulster County has that is enforced on our buildings and grounds would also apply to contractors and businesses that are working with us on our in our buildings and on our grounds. So it will also serve as a way to bring together policies so that we have an ongoing growing list of what policies we have. And things like our anti-smoking policy. If we have a contractor that's working someplace else, they should have an anti-smoking policy if we're contracting with them. And that should be done at the level of the RFP. They're made aware that we expect that if they're doing this work for us that they would comply. I don't know how it will work out on all of the different kinds of policies we have, and it may fall apart because there's too much that's brought into one resolution. But I thought I'd call it to your attention so that we think about any of our public health policies and whether this resolution would help. One of the main reasons that I wanted to bring it forward is that some policies do contain a waiver provision, and that is handled currently by the executive branch, and I would like the legislative branch to have a role in having to weigh in and really have a two-thirds majority to grant a waiver from any policy that we've put in place. It wouldn't say that it couldn't be done, but it would provide a mechanism for the legislature to be in that discussion, and a pretty high bar to say that we would want two-thirds of the legislature to agree that a waiver is warranted before it would be given.
Thank you. Just in the future, I would love to be able to put like other resolutions that aren't going to be on in the committee. I definitely would like to put them on the agenda so that we.
I should have sent it to
you
all.
No worries.
Jay, would you be able to send it over to Public Works? Because that'll be another one where it should probably be on the not to this committee but relevant.
So next we've got Legislator Petit and then Stewart.
Thank you. Going back to your resolution.
Which one?
127,
yep.
We're feeding people in emergency shelters, and I had participated, as you did, in Project Resilience.
Yeah.
And prior to that, to a food recovery program where we went and got leftover food from the Omega Institute, and it was, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, but I would love to see you move forward with this. I mean, going grocery shopping now and filling up a half a bag for $80 is insane. And I do volunteer for two pantries, and I'm just seeing more need. And need from folks who are, you know, not Americans or Ukraine refugees. We have several now coming to one of our pantries. And then when we were walking through Elizabeth Manor, there is a commercial kitchen there. So there are some opportunities. Did you want to meet separately? Do you want me to pull some of the churches in? Because they are our best resources. I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine. I
don't
want to speak over
you.
I don't
want to pull back on this.
Yeah, if I may respond to that. You know, this is a policy that would be implemented by the county executive's team,
mm-hmm.
I have a lot of respect for their request to study the issue more before we move forward with the policy. And that's what this emergency housing assessment is intended to be. So I considering that they cannot staff, that it is already challenging to staff existing meal delivery programs, I know that it has been very discouraging when we set projects into motion that don't come to fruition in a way that is to our satisfaction. And I worry that if we set this in motion without letting the county executive's office really set a path forward for emergency housing that addresses some of the issues that we all agree we're mired in right now, I worry that this would be another policy that is a great idea that's very, very hard to implement without the support and without the understanding that it needs. So that's my reason for not pushing harder on it at this time.
And is there a timeline?
I'm really hoping that we can get the assessment of the emergency housing journey resolved in the next few months. I mean, would you say that that's still a realistic timeline?
So the way that we had written the RFP, I think the final report was going to be in 6 months, right? That's sort of not unusual for an evaluation, I think, so I don't know if 2 months, given all the other fires that are happening right now, I don't know if I can commit to 2 months, but we can talk and try to figure out how to put a time limit on it so that we can give you one.
Legislator Stewart.
I just had a question for the deputy county executive. Not to put you on the spot, but I was wondering if you might be able to give just kind of an update on the situation at the former Skytop Hotel and what is happening there. And then I was also wondering if you would be able to comment on the MLS listing that I sent regarding the former Sawyer Kill Motel in Socrates.
Sure. So I can start with the second one first. County executive took a look on. We are actually looking at it on Google Earth today,
mm-hmm.
and it looked a little. It didn't look like the best location. It was like more in between two major highways, and she was noting that the roof looked like it might need a replacement from that aerial view. We're talking about the same one?
This is the one on Kings Highway in Saugerties near 312.
Yes. Yeah. And you visited?
I actually visited the site. Saugerties actually scheduled the site for demolition.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. So it's been scheduled for demolition for derelict building by the town of Saugerties.
It's currently listed on MLS.
I know.
Yeah.
I did the same thing, but there is a scheduled demolition. I'm sorry. I'll confirm that with the supervisor. But I mean, there was actually an article in the Freeman about it. I went up to the site on a weekend and looked at it, and it's in real poor shape.
I thought it was in poor shape. I wasn't quite sure
how poor shape it was in.
Yeah, the doors are open in it, on it, and everything else. Just chain across the front, can't get in, but you can walk in inside. So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Kind of buyer beware.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that it can't be listed, but it would probably be sold in as of condition without any permits or guarantees of habitability.
Right.
You
also went, and it was also bleak and horrible.
I think it would be. Moody, Money Pit.
Yeah.
It'd be another challenging property.
There's a great, I'll send you the link. One person I actually called it the Bates Motel, and he's got pictures through the whole thing on it. So it was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But.
Then Skytop.
Right.
The update there is that they changed their name. They're now the Kingston Motel. They're no longer part of the national franchise. They have remediated the issues that DSDEC presented as far as the septic system.
The septic system issues,
yeah. So there's no, last I checked, and I can verify this again, RDOH was pretty confident that they would be able to renew their permit, which doesn't come up for another renewal until November. The town of Ulster also found their remediation satisfactory, so they didn't end up closing down the property. So I think as far as the town, DEC, and DOH goes, they're in compliance. However, we're still not placing DSS clients there because the condition when the county executive visited was so dark that she's very cautious about entering back into that type of arrangement.
Right.
So, but as of right now, our understanding is that they have people who stay there who privately pay.
Yep, Director
Doyle. And I just, in a little bit, go back in the discussion you folks were having before. One of the, I think, the things that everyone should realize, the threats that you have right now, beyond some of the more immediate emergency housing threats, are the existing properties that you own, the economic opportunities that are afforded these properties now with respect to where we are in terms of tourism, is essentially turning these properties over in a fairly quick manner, and they're not looking at social services as a means to essentially make ends meet. So the Roadway Inn is a great example where it's been sold, and we've met with them, and they're continuing to talk about conversations with respect to leasing to social services. This was before they were closing down, but their thought was that they were actually going into a higher end market. And would gradually move away from social services clients. You have another situation in the Napanoc area where you have a motel that you currently use for social services client that is actually up for sale also and is more likely to move into a higher end client, et cetera. So you're losing the existing emergency housing you have before you're even able to replace it with anything else.
And that one we are looking into, if he doesn't have one.
There is a former bungalow colony on 209 in Napanoc. Is that the one that you're referring to?
No, a different one. This is what is known as the Colonial Inn.
Okay.
In Napanoc. There is that other bungalow colony. We're aware of it. We've actually looked at that as well with the supervisor.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Because that's a fairly sizable property, too.
Yeah, that would actually have to be built out.
Okay.
All right. So I feel like that's a good bit of new business. And so unless there's anything super pressing, I'll move forward with the last item here, which is just a note that Resolution 422 is forthcoming, which will be from Legislator Erner, is that right? Yeah, regarding the policy to ban discrimination in housing on the basis of source of income, which will be proposed next month as part of the human rights law. And so I just wanted to include that as a forthcoming resolution. And with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Lopez.
Second.
Second by Nolan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Well, that was fine.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Great. Thank you all so much.
I can always feel my job.